And welcome to the GB2B podcast, where insights meet action and innovation drives transformation. This podcast is brought to you by Global Business to Brands, a digital content to commerce platform dedicated to empowering decision makers in the business and finance ecosystem. At Global Business to Brands, GB2B in short, our mission is to deliver actionable insights that inspire strategic pursuits, foster innovation, and create measurable global impact. Today, we kick off our exciting podcast series titled Financing Sustainable Development and Growth, Strategic, Governance, and Technological Insights. This series is designed to explore the critical elements shaping the future of sustainable finance, governance, and technology in a rapidly evolving world. To help us unpack these themes, we are honored to have an exceptional guest join us today. Our guest speaker is none other than Dr. Sayuri Mudaliar, a trailblazer in sustainable finance and governance. Dr. Mudaliar is a seasoned project finance lawyer and sustainability professional with over 30 years of experience. She has worked across diverse sectors, including asset management, investment banking, renewable energy, mining, and telecommunications infrastructure. As the ESG director at the Open Access Data Centers in the VIOC Group, Dr. Mudaliar is leading efforts to build and operate digital infrastructure across Africa. Her expertise spans infrastructure project finance, impact investing, and global environmental and social governance standards. Dr. Mudaliar, we are honored to have you as a guest today. Welcome to the GB2B podcast.
Thank you very much.
As we proceed further, let's start with the big picture. Why is sustainable growth becoming a strategic imperative across industries today?
Sustainable growth requires a corporation or industry to consider all factors that influence its resilience and growth, and that includes environmental and social factors. The drive behind sustainable growth becoming a strategic imperative can be attributed to several factors. So firstly, risk management, one of the micro factors affecting corporations. Sustainability helps to mitigate risks relating to climate change, resource scarcity, and socioeconomic instability, which speaks to the context in which a company operates. We're also finding that there's increasing consumer demand, a growing preference for sustainable products and practices, and this gives companies a competitive advantage when they adopt sustainable practices. It's often linked to improved brand reputation and operational efficiencies. And then the global thinking around sustainability has changed. Corporates are also considered global citizens who contribute significantly to pollution, climate change, and loss of biodiversity. And so they have an obligation to conduct their businesses responsibly, taking into account the effect that their products, operations, and other activities have on the well-being of people and our planet. And what is the effect of this shift? Of course, we're seeing regulatory pressure. Governments and international bodies are implementing stricter environmental regulations. This also pulls through in how companies report their performance in their annual financial statement. Most jurisdictions throughout the world now have specific requirements about sustainability reporting. Mm-hmm. And then very importantly, investor demand for sustainable growth has increased. Potential shareholders and lenders consider sustainability indicators to be essential to measuring and managing risk. And any institution looking to invest in a business is going to conduct extensive due diligence to assess the risk of that investment. And this will often include both financial and non-financial risks. And in recent years, we've seen that there's been an exponential increase in the number of governance frameworks that investors apply to manage these non-financial, or what we refer to as sustainability risks.
All right, great. That's fascinating. So now looking at the governance frameworks, how do they globally or in emerging economies either support or hinder financing for sustainability? So if you can throw more light on that once again.
So with governance frameworks, especially in project finance, these were introduced by various industry bodies and institutions to create a set of uniform standards and also provide a level of certainty for providers of finance and for organizations that are receiving financing or funding. The benefit of these frameworks is that the parties understand upfront, for example, the criteria for qualifying for the finance, how the financing is structured, how their sustainability performance targets will be measured, what benefits they will receive if they achieve those targets, and what the compliance and reporting requirements will be. The problem that has arisen is that there are now so many different frameworks, standards, and principles. And this situation has become increasingly challenging for corporations who have multiple shareholders and lenders that apply different frameworks. So, for example, you could have one company that has a loan from an investment bank, and they would have to apply the United Nations principles of responsible banking or principles for responsible investment. And if they're in an emerging market and they have a development finance institute as a shareholder or funder, then they'd also have to apply either the Equator principles or the IFC performance standards or one of the other DFI standards. And then there's the accounting standards, like the new IFRS sustainability standards, depending on which jurisdiction you're in. If you're a listed company, then there's also rules and governance standards of the particular stock exchange that you're listed on. And then if you're a company that has a shareholder in the EU, for example, there are specific regulations and directives that will apply. So you can see that governance frameworks can create significant complexity. The questions that can arise for a company would include, which standards or principles should we follow? How do we justify the costs of measurement, compliance, and reporting that comes along with aligning to a particular framework? Many companies tend to underestimate the cost of sustainable financing and only consider the cash flow benefits of receiving the funds. I find that this is particularly true for startups who are looking for venture capital finance. And so it's quite important for organizations to ask, does this cost justify the financing that we are receiving? So overall, I would say yes, the sustainable finance governance frameworks and requirements do support financing sustainability goals, but they also come with significant resource demands relating to compliance and reporting. And companies who are looking for this sort of finance must be aware of that.
All right. So that's quite interesting. Governance can truly be the bridge or the bottleneck, depending upon how it's structured. So now let's talk about the roadblocks. So you've mentioned a few already, but what are the most significant challenges businesses face when trying to align their financial goals with sustainability?
Businesses encounter several hurdles when trying to align their financial goals with sustainability. Firstly, short-term financial pressures. If you are a new business or operating during an economic downturn or in a highly competitive industry or market, then long-term sustainability goals may not be your priority, and budgeting for these will be quite challenging. This is why aligning your sustainability strategy and goals with your overall business strategy is critical to avoid these conflicting priorities. In addition, implementing major sustainability initiatives may call for significant upfront investment. Specific projects, for example, introducing solar panels to produce renewable energy, often require substantial capital investment. Then there is the regulatory complexity. Navigating varying sustainability regulations across different regions can be challenging. The sustainability regulatory environment has become complex, and companies often need external advisors and consultants to help with the compliance. And this brings us to the cost of compliance and reporting, both from a regulatory perspective and compliance with international governance standards and principles, which typically require verification and assurance from independent reviewers or auditors. And this requirement tends to result in annual compliance costs for the recipients of finance.
All right, so it's clear that while the intent is there, the execution can be tricky. These knowledge gaps you mentioned, it's almost like businesses need a playbook to guide them through this transition. On the flip side, there is an opportunity as well. How can businesses position themselves to attract sustainable investments effectively?
The global thinking in the investment sector is that organizations should have a compelling and credible sustainability story. Not just avoid greenwashing, but also to have a clear pathway of sustainable growth. And this should include achievable and credible targets that push you beyond business as usual. It is so important to show any potential investor how you will not just increase their return on investment, but also contribute to their sustainability goals and targets.
For example, many private equity investors seek to increase their SDG impact through their investments. What is SDG impact? These are the Sustainable Development Goals, which the world aims to achieve by 2030, that enable the global community as a whole to conduct our lives and businesses in a manner that meets our socioeconomic needs sustainably, in other words, without compromising the needs of future generations. So overall, I would suggest three critical action points. The first one I have mentioned already: embed sustainability into your core strategy. It is important that your compelling sustainability narrative aligns with your long-term business goals. Secondly, engage stakeholders. Involve your employees, customers, and investors in your sustainability initiatives. This helps to build trust and commitment. And finally, transparency and reporting is critical. Maintain clear and transparent reporting on your sustainability practices and outcomes.
Right, that's gold, Dr. Mudaliar. I especially love the point about how integrity and transparency in reporting is important, and what is the social, how we can balance the social economic needs in a sustainable ecosystem, right? So it's such a simple but yet powerful concept in building credibility with investors. So I know our listeners love real-world examples. So are there any standout case studies where strategic financing and governance frameworks enabled sustainable growth?
Well, yes, there are obviously almost an infinite number of examples. Mm-hmm. We can talk perhaps about some of the high-profile examples that people might have heard about or read about. So you would have realized that there's a lot in the press about green bonds, and a lot of companies are issuing green bonds.
Yeah.
So what a bond is a bond is a debt instrument. So similarly to how when you're trying to raise capital investment in a company, you issue shares, and then if it's listed, members of the public, or if it's not listed, then people that you extend an invitation to can buy shares. So a bond is actually similar to that, but it's a debt instrument. So in many cases, it can also be listed. But what happens is, instead of buying shares, then people basically give you that money, and it's almost, it's a debt. It's like a loan, but it's a structured instrument. So that is what, and green bonds in particular have as their, what must happen is that the proceeds that you receive from the bond must be used for green initiatives. And there's a lot of governance, there's very specific governance standards around green bonds in terms of what these initiatives would be. So that's just some background about what a green bond is. So for example, a very high profile green bond issuance was from Apple's green bond initiatives. They issued $4.7 billion green bond to finance projects that reduce their carbon emissions, to use renewable energy, and to promote energy efficiency overall. And many other companies have used green bonds for exactly this. And in this particular case, it's an unusually high number. But if we look at what the impact is, because that's very important when we're talking about sustainability, it's not just, well, we got the money and we now started using it. Mm-hmm. The funds were used for various environmental projects, including the development of renewable energy sources and implementing their energy efficient technologies in their supply chain. There are other, in other industries, they're also using green bonds. So if we look at the motor industry, so we were talking about how we use this for sustainable growth. So a motor vehicle company, for example, might decide to launch a new business. So let's go into electric vehicles or hydrogen fuel cars. So Toyota issued a green bond that was a $1.75 billion green bond. And that was to support the development and manufacturing of their environmentally friendly vehicles. So that would include hybrid vehicles, hydrogen fuel cell cars. And what this whole initiative achieved was that it helped Toyota to advance its sustainability goals by promoting, you know, transportation options, which is one of these SDGs, reducing the environmental impact of its operations. But often when we are referring to sustainable growth, it's quite significant that apart from the green initiatives and the green impact, the environmental impact, that these initiatives also end up providing operational efficiency. And that's quite significant. Now, apart from green bonds, what we're finding that is very popular currently is what we call blended finance. Now, blended finance is a combination of financing from public sector and private sector funds. So often in the past, many decades ago, you'd often think that everything to do with our environmental issues or sustainability would have been a public sector responsibility. But because over time it became evident that the private sector was actually contributing significantly to pollution and climate change and adverse environmental impacts, we developed blended finance where private sector companies, who couldn't afford to completely fund these initiatives, would also get some help from the public sector. And you will find, I'm sure you'd read very often, especially recently, about all of these funds that are being set up, climate funds or biodiversity funds, especially after we have these Conference of the Parties relating to the different environmental agreements. For example, last year when we had the various COPs, during these COPs, developed countries or large institutions will commit large amounts of money. And in many cases, these large funds will go into what we call a climate fund or a biodiversity fund, as I mentioned. So a nice example of that kind of blended finance initiative is the Global Climate Partnership Fund. And that was set up to mitigate climate change by investing in renewable energy and energy efficient projects in developing countries, so emerging economies. And one of the things about these funds is that they raise the finance and then will award this to smaller companies and projects. So if you're a startup, for example, and you're not able to go out and raise the funds yourself, then you can apply to a fund like this for specific projects. So the Global Climate Partnership Fund that we're speaking about, for example, it has financed over 200 projects and has resulted in significant reductions in CO2 emissions and promoting sustainable energy solutions, especially in emerging markets. So the whole point about blended funds is that, and blended finance, is that you blend the public and private capital. You've got the public investors providing almost a cushion with regard to your risk, and that attracts private sector investment because it reduces that risk. So examples like this highlight how, you know, blended finance can help you to mobilize capital for what would be high impact sustainability projects. You leverage your public funds to de-risk your investments, and you attract private capital. And then the impact is that you're able to finance what would be normally smaller projects in emerging markets.
Wow, what a great example, especially when you dived into this blended finance initiative objectives or how it works. It really shows that with the right strategy and governance, businesses can turn sustainability into a competitive advantage as well, right? So what lessons can other businesses take away from these examples?
I think when we're looking at specifically sustainable finance, you want to choose the most suitable financing instrument or vehicle for your business and circumstances, not just follow the trends. I spoke to you about how you find a lot in the media about green bonds and now more recently blended finance. But, you know, if your competitors are issuing green bonds or entering into sustainability-linked loans, for example, that does not necessarily mean that these are the right instruments for your business. So it's really very important when you're choosing sustainable finance instruments or structuring transactions to incorporate sustainable financing, it's really important to get proper advice upfront from reputable professional services firms. We spoke about the challenges regarding sustainable finance, especially the cost of financing, the cost of compliance and reporting. So, you know, you'd have to have some kind of exercise done on your specific circumstances to see what are the benefits, what would be the cost, and what, and based on all of that, to choose what the right instrument is.
So true. So looking ahead, how do you see global sustainability standards, governance reforms, and strategic financing coming together to accelerate sustainable growth?
So I think with the global standards, what, you know, I think adopting these international sustainability standards does ensure consistency and accountability across borders. So no matter where you are in the world, if you're applying for finance, then the organization you're applying to, if it's a global bank, for example, or any other global institution, there's an understanding that there's that we're going to be consistent. You understand how this works. You'll follow the global, the governance standards. So I think that trend is going to continue in terms of using these governance frameworks. I think strengthening these governance frameworks will certainly enhance transparency and improve access to sustainable finance. So, you know, continuously reforming these frameworks is important. Taking into account whether or not they're working. So one of the things we've seen over a period of time is that sometimes, you know, governance standards may have been put in place for a particular regional context. For example, green bonds may initially have emerged within a European context. But when you apply this to emerging markets, to developing countries, where the circumstances are different, then you might have to adapt this. So that continuous reform is quite significant, and I think that is something we'll continue to see. And then just from a strategic financing perspective, you asked how that will help to accelerate sustainable growth. I think these innovative financing mechanisms like green bonds and blended finance can certainly help to mobilize private capital for sustainable projects. I think one of the things around sustainability projects, green projects, and certainly social projects is that the private sector is sometimes reluctant to invest in these because there is the perception that there might be higher risk. So when you have a blended finance structure, you've got a slight de-risking of the transaction, and that obviously then helps to stimulate private investment.
Great.
So an important point to note about these innovative financing mechanisms, just my last point, I suppose, is that these, especially the innovative instruments, are critical for startups because they obviously often struggle to obtain financing, especially in emerging economies. And while bigger organizations may have a significant balance sheet and enough capital backing them up to go to a bank and say, provide us with funding, startups don't have that. So these innovative financing mechanisms within the sustainable finance ecosystem have been significant in providing that kind of financing for startups. And so overall, I think I would say, you know, if I could just give my last thoughts on this, for individual corporations and other organizations, sustainable growth can only be achieved through, firstly, setting clear goals. You have to define specific measurable sustainability targets. And then secondly, integrating sustainability into all aspects of your business. So we usually refer to that as sustainability or ESG integration. You have to embed that sustainability can't be a separate part of your organization that operates in a silo. It, you know, the thinking, the values must be embedded into all aspects of how you conduct your business. So if you consider that you're a responsible business and you have these sustainability goals, then the way you do your procurement must be responsible. The way you conduct your human resources should also align with being a responsible business. The ethics that you apply to your organization, how you conduct all aspects of your business need to reflect what you're saying in terms of your sustainability. And then lastly, just that continuous improvement, continuously looking at how you're doing things. We need to regularly review and update our sustainability strategies. We want to constantly be adapting to new challenges and opportunities. Obviously, always understanding the macroeconomic context of your business and aligning your organization accordingly.
Fantastic. So that's an exciting vision for the future. It gives hope that with the right measures, sustainable growth can become the norm, not the exception. So, Dr. Mudlia, thank you for sharing such incredible insights. This conversation has been nothing short of enlightening, from the strategic importance of sustainable growth to the opportunities and challenges businesses face. Your insights have provided so much depth to this complex topic. And what stood out was how often startups came up in your responses today. Their potential to drive sustainability, their agility in aligning with the ESG goals, and their ability to attract innovative financing solutions, especially in emerging economies. It's clear that startups hold a unique position in shaping the future of sustainable development, and that's exactly what we'll dive into in the next part of our series, Startups and Sustainability, Financing Innovation in Emerging Economies. We'll explore how innovation and entrepreneurship are reshaping sustainability narratives, particularly in underrepresented regions. And for our listeners, stay tuned for the next episode in this series. You won't want to miss it. Thank you all for tuning into the GB2B podcast. Don't forget to subscribe and follow us for more actionable insights. Until next time, stay inspired and keep driving change.